Blog Talk Radio.
Our communities have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the powers to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer.
Welcome to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad, and I want to give all of you the greetings of peace of Ice. Salaam Alaikum. You have been listening to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan opening us up to this program with excerpts from The Time and What Must Be Done. And that, of course, is the focus of Elevated Places, the time we live in and what must be done. It is a great blessing to be with you and to be live on blogtalkradio.com/Elevated Places. This is, of course, a talk show and driven by the listeners, not only those who log in and listen in, but you can join the discussion. So when you call in at 347-324-5091, 347-324-5091, please hit number 1, which will ask you if you'd like to talk with the host, and that will cue you up to take part in the discussion. This is a special edition, beloved, of Elevated Places. We are so blessed tonight. Coming on the air shortly will be the renowned psychiatrist, author, lecturer, activist, Dr. Frances Cress Welzing. Of course, I am joined, as always, in Elevated Places would not be what it is without my brilliant co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Terrence.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, ma'am?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. I'm so excited about Dr. Welzing coming on. And, of course, I am excited about all that is going on around us. And we, of course, look forward every Thursday night to hearing your insight as to what's going on around the nation.
Yes, ma'am. Well, do we want to go ahead and jump right on into that?
Yes, sir. And then I think after we talk about that, we will hear from Dr. Welzing.
Well, I just want to thank everyone once again for tuning in to Elevated Places, and we welcome your calls, and please call in tonight. You know, the minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, has a 52-week series going on every Saturday night called The Time and What Must Be Done, and you can watch it every Saturday night at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern at noi.org/the time. And the reason why I bring that up first, because I'm looking outside my window and I just thought I saw lightning, but we're in a snowstorm. And I did hear lightning and thunder, but it's snowing outside. So I'm saying we are in that time of these last days. Also, be ready for Savior's Day. Savior's Day is coming up February the 24th with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan speaking on the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad's Economic Blueprint. You do not want to miss that. You can learn more about both of those events at NOI.org. So I want to jump quickly into a couple of announcements. As we know, President Obama yesterday spoke about gun violence and gun control, and he's talking about the CDC is going to be doing research on the causes and effects of gun violence. He talked about strengthening background checks so people are not easily able to get guns, and just limiting the gun clips to 10 shots instead of multiple shots, more than that. He also talked about giving schools the ability to hire more resource officers. So we know that that conversation is still going on, but we also know that the Nation of Islam do not carry weapons, and we have had the best security known to man. We've secured the Million Man March in Washington, D.C., but we have seen the works of the brothers in the communities with no weapons as we're looking at this gun control situation. And the last one is Tavis Smalley. He is doing a symposium right now in D.C., and the symposium is Vision for a New America. And which is interesting, he's having Paul Ryan, Marion Wright Elderman from the Education Defense, Children Defense, I forgot the whole name of it. Newt Gingrich, Cornel West, even Michael Moore are talking about this vision for a new America. And one of the things they talked about first was poverty in America. So he's having this distinct panel of people talking about that. And I still will go back to my first thing, talking about Savior's Day, and waiting to hear from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad Economic Blueprint, because he has a website, afuturewithoutpoverty.com, and I'm wondering what they're going to come up with. And as Moses did with the magicians, he allowed them to cast down their rods, and then Moses cast down his rods. And we know that Moses' rod ate up all of the falsehoods. So all of the things that they're talking about getting us out of poverty in want, as the minister said at the beginning of the show, we are seen as toxic, and they are trying to remove us, so we're not in the equation. Or we are in the equation for poverty. That is totally get rid of us. And I know he made that speech at Wisdom in Newark, New Jersey, or part of that speech, or he did a lecture on that in Newark, New Jersey. And people continue to hear the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. But those are some of the things that are going on that we want to be mindful and watchful for as these discussions on poverty, gun control, continues in our community.
I saw the, and I'm sure most of the callers and listeners have seen by now, the ad taken out by the NRA, National Rifle Association, to the minister's point of an atmosphere leaning toward not only hatred of, that already exists, but feeding that hatred into such a frenzy that it leads toward an attempt at actually taking the president's life. The NRA spent quite a bit of money putting on a television ad, and the ad asked the viewer the question, are the president's kids more important than your kids? And
right.
It goes on to say that his kids go to school protected by armed guards, but he does not want your children protected by armed guards. Very insidious, very dangerous ad. In conjunction with some of the madness that's been coming across the airwaves, particularly certain in crazed white males, such as I think Alex Jones, and then the man that was on saying that if any laws are passed tightening the control of firearms, he's going to start killing people. Now, under any other circumstances with anybody else in the White House, these people would be arrested.
Right. And
Tom
Hartman has a progressive TV show, and they were discussing that. I think they were discussing it today or yesterday about that whole conversation that you were saying, President Obama having hit children and them going to, you know, schools with armed guards, but, you know, don't give us the right. So they allow certain conversations or they make certain arguments to justify them literally. And even one guy even said, why shouldn't a person have more than 10 shots in their gun if they feel it's necessary for that? And I'm not trying to understand why is it necessary to have 20 and 30 rounds in a gun for whatever situation. But that is the argument. People are really justifying and coming out strong on this issue.
Yes, and you know, there was never any concern over protection of a president's children. That's a given. That's rudimentary. That's obvious.
Yep.
Ever since Harry Truman was in the White House, I think he went into office after Roosevelt died in 45. And from the time of Harry Truman through now, there has been the Secret Service, and protection has been provided not only for the president but for his family. These questions were never raised during Bush, Clinton, the other Bush, et cetera. And so now all of a sudden, are his kids better than yours? In other words, here's a black man in the Oval Office, but his black children are protected. Are they better than your white children? That's really the underlying question. Now, it appears that we are being joined at this time by Dr. Welsing, and I want to say, as I introduce her, that when I came into the Nation of Islam in the 1980s, Minister Farrakhan was engaged in a practice of making sure that the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad were introduced to and heard from on a consistent basis, the intellectual giants among us. And one of those giants and stars was and is the renowned psychiatrist, author, and lecturer, Dr. Francis Kress Welsing. And anybody with consciousness is aware of Dr. Welsing's seminal work, The ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Colors. She is one of the premier thinkers of our time, and she came out with such a bold psychoanalysis of white supremacy as a total system structure designed to ensure white genetic survival that it is an essential study for every one of us. And she is I have been in her presence. She's a beautiful woman. She's a fascinating woman. And to have her with us this evening is a blessing. Dr. Welsing is a Chicago native. She's the second of three daughters. Her father was a physician. Her mother, a school teacher. She received her MD from Howard University. She interned at Cook County Hospital in Chicago, followed by her residency in general psychiatry at St. Elizabeth Hospital in Washington, D.C. Now, before the ISIS Papers in 1991, many of you are familiar with her earlier publication, The Kress Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism. And Dr. Welsing gained fame on the national scale when she, on television as a young doctor in 1974, successfully debated Dr. William Shockley, the Nobel Prize laureate who was the spokesperson for white superiority and black inferiority. And you really need to go on YouTube and see that. You talk about feeling empowered after you watch that. Dr. Welsing has lectured at countless venues, including colleges, universities throughout the United States, London, England. She is the recipient of numerous awards for her contributions in the field of mental health and her service to the black community. Dr. Welsing, assalamu alaikum, and thank you so much for taking time to be with us on Elevated Places.
Well, thank you very, very much. That is a commendable introduction, and I thank you for that.
Well, we thank God for you, that's for sure. We thank Allah God for you. And, you know, Dr. Welsing, there's so much to be gained from having a conversation with you. But I want to, I guess, start now, and then if we have time and you're able to take a little time, we can move back. I really wanted to, and I think the listeners want to hear from you, in terms of your insight on the effect of the presidency of Barack Obama on black people in America.
Well, let me just say I'm a general psychiatrist and child psychiatrist, and
yes.
The thing that has impressed me most is talking to black children, particularly black male children. I've had black male children, you know, 9, 10, 11, children say they want their name changed to Barack.
Mm.
Do you see? Or children who easily say that, I recently had a 7-year-old who said he wanted to be president. Now, in my lifetime, I'll be 78 in March, and in my lifetime, I remember a cartoon that was in the New Yorker magazine when I either was in college or shortly after that. So that takes us back to the 1950s or early 60s, and there was a cartoon in the New Yorker magazine, and a little white boy and a little black boy were standing by a fire hydrant, and they were about the height of the fire hydrant, and the little black boy said to the little white boy, "I'll sell you my chance to be president for a nickel."
Mm.
That it was, you know, in other words, this was
yeah.
something that black people and white people thought would never occur, but it has taken place in the 20th century. And so that in itself is significant. It is significant that this is a black man married to a black woman.
Yeah.
And they are living in the White House with their two children and the grandmother, the maternal grandmother. And this is something that I think it's world changing. People do not have to agree with everything President Obama has done as the presidential figure.
Yes.
But he has done nothing to embarrass or to degrade the entire family, do you see? So if we look at his achievement as an individual person, in other words, every black parent who has aspirations for their children, and certainly the male children, you know, that you go to school and that you finish school and you try to make the best grades that you can, and you account for yourself. You have a profession or you have a career. You know, in other words, this is everything that we would like to see all of our children doing.
Yes.
And so we can look at that. And also, I think the most impressive thing, remember the photograph of the little black male child who asked the president, "Can I touch your hair?"
Yes.
That was one of the most moving things that has ever occurred in this country. Because this black child, he's looking at this black man. And in a sense, it's as though I can't believe it, you know, as a little child.
Yeah.
But maybe if I touch your hair and it has the same wrinkles that my hair does.
Come on.
That I will believe it. And so President Obama didn't act, well, what, ridiculous and brush the child off. He bent down.
Yes, he did.
And allowed the child to touch his hair. And he's, you know, we are struggling as black people in this system of racism, white supremacy. black male-female relationships are struggling. And so for black people to be able to look at this example, every single picture that we see of the president and the first lady and their children, they, you know, they're hugging each other, they're holding each other's hands, and you can see and feel the love that they share with one another as a family unit.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, I think that as black people, we would like in our dreams, well, the black man is going to be president and all our problems are going to be solved as black people. But, of course, if we take our understanding to a much deeper level and we understand the thing that I have talked about for many years based on the understanding and information given to us by Neely Fuller Jr. Neely Fuller was a guard at the Bureau of Engraving in Washington, D.C. He wasn't a college professor.
Yes.
He was a brilliant man that I happened to meet. I met him in 1967. And to make a long story short, I was training in general psychiatry at the time and looking for what exactly is racism, because I was training in general psychiatry and taking histories on white and black patients, but all the black patients, there was something about racism in their history, and I came out of that saying, if I'm going to be an effective psychiatrist to black people, I have to really understand more about what racism is. I used to, when I was in college, I used to think I'm a Marxist, and Karl Marx has the understanding that is important about economics as the determining factor, but the more I read about Marxism, it did not answer the problems that I saw that we had as black people. So I felt I discarded that and felt that I needed to understand more about what racism, what exactly is racism.
Mm-hmm.
And Neely Fuller Jr., who is still a resident of the District of Columbia, Neely Fuller Jr. had been writing from the mid-1950s when he was a soldier in the Korean War, and he was stationed at a radar site in Japan, and he said he started thinking about the United States and thinking about the issues we faced as black people, and he's the first person, and he started writing about racism as a total system.
Okay.
You see, racism wasn't just discrimination. It was a total system structure that functioned through all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war, for the ultimate purpose of maintaining a power equation of white power over a relative non-white powerlessness. Well, when I heard him talk, it was like a huge light bulb going on in your head. That's what I'm looking for. I'm
wow.
looking for that level of depth understanding. And I spent a great deal of time talking to him and had another colleague from Chicago, the late Dr. Carl Hutchinson. And Dr. Hutchinson was at Howard University, and he was training to be an orthopedic surgeon. And the three of us used to sit in my apartment in Washington and, you know, talk till 3 o'clock in the morning and debating
yeah.
ideas. But basically mm-hmm. listening to Neely Fuller talk about his concepts of racism, white supremacy, and his statement, racism is white supremacy is racism. There is no other functional, operational racism on the planet at this point in time, other than white supremacy. And Mr. Fuller had, I think, about 1,500 pages of hand-printed material that he had been working on. And Dr. Hutchinson, now mind you, he's a resident in orthopedic surgery, and he said, I will type the manuscript in between surgical cases.
Mm.
And so I was determined that it get published, and Dr. Carl Hutchinson, the late Dr. Carl Hutchinson, typed this hand-printed manuscript. It was magnificent printing, but Dr. Carl Hutchinson typed the manuscript, and then I worked with Mr. Fuller until 1984, being determined that this work has got to be published. But his seminal, I consider his ideas next to Dr. Du Bois in 1903 in his book, The Soul of Black Folks, when he said the problem of the 20th century is a question of the color line between the lighter and the darker races of mankind. And then mid-century, 1954, Dr. Du Bois's book was 1903, Neely Fuller in 1954 started writing about racism is a global, local, national, global system of thought, speech, and action for maintaining the power equation, white power over relative non-white powerlessness. Well, my being a psychiatrist, and psychiatrists at that time, you know, wanting to understand what is the causation of particular patterns of behavior. So I would say, but wait a minute, why would they do it? Meaning, why would people who classify themselves as white evolve, develop such a global system? And so I remember I was standing in my kitchen in my apartment. And, you know, when you raise the question, why, and this is why little children, you know, when they're very young, they start asking why. Well, the child is, and parents can sometimes get overwhelmed or exhausted from children saying why so many times, but the children are beginning to try to understand the world. So when you ask the question, why is something the way it is, they are asking a question like about cause and effect. And this is critical. That's the beginning of scientific thinking. You see, beyond asking what something is, why is it? Meaning, what is the causation? And so that's when I came up with just thinking about things that you learn after you've been in school a long time and you do a lot of reading. And so I thought about two things in particular that people who classify themselves as white would focus on. They were constantly saying that black people were genetically inferior. Mm-hmm. And they would also refer to people of color as minorities. But then I said, well, wait a minute, the facts on this planet, on planet Earth, is that people with white skin are fewer than one-tenth of the people on the planet. And instead of black people being genetically inferior, black people are genetically dominant. And in terms of skin pigmentation, and this is what President Obama also represents. His mother's white. His father is black. But because of the ability to produce the black pigment, the genetic ability to produce the black pigment melanin, anytime you mix white, which is a genetic recessive trait, see, in genetics you have genetic dominance and genetic recessive traits, and the failure to produce melanin pigmentation is a genetic recessive trait, and it is also defined as a genetic deficiency. And so once I put those two things together, then I said, oh, I understand racism. That if you have a planet in which 9/10 of the people have the genetic ability to produce skin coloration, and you have a minority of people, a tiny minority of people whose skins are white, and those people, once Christopher Columbus in the 15th century came out of Europe and started European circumnavigating the planet, and every place they went, the people were colored. And if the white males had sexual relations with the colored women and they waited 9 months, all the children looked like the mothers. They would be colored. And so I said, from that point, the the white population on the planet began to understand that unless they controlled all of the people on the planet, that they could be vulnerable to white genetic annihilation. Which is why I say this is what racism is about. Racism is a power dynamic that's local, national, global, for the purpose, consciously, subconsciously determined, for the purpose of white genetic survival. And so this is the dynamic, and when people who classify themselves as white don't want black people or people of color talking about racism. So in other words, if a black person now, this is 2013, if they say something about racism, then a white person will start screaming, "You're playing the race card."
Right.
You see,
right.
Because this is the last thing that they, in other words, we are told that we are in a system of democracy or capitalism. Well, that's not true. We are in a system of racism, white supremacy, but we're told we're in a democracy and everybody's equal. But, you know, people of color run into, I mean, this is why black people have high blood pressure and diabetes and all the other illnesses that we have, because black people and other people of color are under 24/7 stress,
yeah,
times 365 days a year times a lifetime, because the stress of racism, white supremacy, which is to hold black people and other people of color, mostly black people. I mean, the emphasis, the war is mostly against black people, because black people have the greatest genetic potential to cause white genetic annihilation, which is why all people of color and all black people learn before they learn how to read. If you're black, get back. If you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're white, you're all right. Because the highest level of being able to produce a black pigment, melanin, gives you the greatest genetic potential to cause white genetic annihilation. If your skin is brown, you have a little less. If your skin is so-called red, a little less. So yellow, a little bit less. And so that's why that color code, and I can go to London and say the same thing, and all the people know how to say, if you're black, get back, brown, stick around, yellow, mellow, white, you're all right. That's the color code for maintaining white genetic survival on the planet. And once I understood that, then many other aspects of white behavior, I say if you understand that, then it's like understanding the picture that a puzzle, you've got a puzzle of 1,000 pieces. But if you see the picture, then you know where all the pieces fit. And so I started, you know, understanding many aspects of white behavior. But once you have the key, and that's why I entitled the paper, the ISIS papers, "The Keys to the Colors." Well,
yeah.
That subtitle, though, actually came from a black man that I saw in a psychiatric clinic. This man was crystal black.
Wow.
And tall black man, and he had been brought into the clinic by the police because he was appearing to be disturbed, mentally disturbed, but he was relatively calm. And so the clinic wasn't very busy, and so I made a diagnosis of schizophrenic reaction. And I said to myself, well, there's nobody else in the clinic. I mean, no other patients really at that point. And I said, well, let me just talk to this man and see if I could understand what he was talking about. Because he was talking in a, you know, in an unreal way. But I said, let me just see if I can, you know, I've got time to listen to him, talk to him, try to understand beyond just making a diagnosis. And ultimately the man said, "Doc, if we can just find the keys to the colors."
Wow.
Now that was so profound to me.
Wow.
He said, "If we can just find the keys to the colors."
My God.
And so that's the subtitle of the ISIS papers. And I believe that we do have the keys to the cause. We don't have to be bewildered. And if we understand this aspect of what I'm saying about racism, white supremacy, all the discussion about guns, that people, you know, why there can't be gun control.
I was going to ask, bring that up.
I believe I have the answer to that because, in other words, consciously, subconsciously, white men look at black men and subconsciously think, you have a weapon that can annihilate me. Now, he's really talking about the black man's genetic potential.
Right.
And so then his, because his genes are recessive, the white male, so then the white male consciously, subconsciously thinks, have to create weapon that can do same thing. Mm-hmm. And that weapon is the gun. And this is why, see, the gun is symbolically and functionally the white male's genitalia.
Yes.
And so there's, you know, in other words, the discussion right now, like I'd like to go on Piers Morgan's show or have Oprah Winfrey. You know, I said they really want to have a major television show.
Come on.
They will, you know, Oprah will interview me.
Yes.
And about racism, and Piers Morgan can interview me about gun control, which is the same thing that happened with Dr. Shockley. Dr. Shockley in the 70s was going around talking about black genetic inferiority. And Tony Brown's journal, Tony Brown had his show, Tony Brown's Journal, at that time, and so I just got tired of listening to people fumble around with trying to counter what Dr. Shockley was saying. And so I called up Tony Brown, and I said, Tony, why don't you have me come on your show and talk, you know, debate Dr. Shockley? And so Tony was, you know, fine, which was, because I said, oh, you know, let me debate, because other people were trying to talk about IQ scores, and they were not able to master his discussion just talking about IQ scores.
Right.
And I knew that my analysis of racism, white supremacy was at a deeper level than that, and I felt that I would be able
much
to. Right. Do you see? In the same way, Phil Donahue.
Right.
Had
his
television show at that time, and he also was at one point was talking about racism, but I felt that the answers, you know, people were well intended, but the answers and discussion was at an inadequate level. And so I wrote to Phil Donahue, and I had previously been on another program he had with a group of black women. We were talking about for colored girls who had tried suicide when a rainbow is enough. But I said to Phil Donahue, I said, you should have me come on your show and talk about racism. And I kind of, you know, like you just do something like that and you don't expect an answer. But Phil Donahue, you know, answered back and said, come on the show. And I said, my only stipulation is that it not be a panel of people, because some shows, you know, if you get a panel of three people, black people, the white interviewer will use one black person pitting them against the other.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
The discussion is null and void.
Right.
And so I said to Mr. Donahue, you know, so he said, fine. So then I was on his program, and we had that discussion about racism. I mean, I commend him. I remember asking my father the first time, my father and my mother are deceased, but at the time I was asking my father, what did he think about Phil Donahue? And my father said, well, he's about as fair as a white man can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just give Phil Donahue, you know, a lot of credit, because he did allow for the discussion of racism.
Yes.
You see, not with a lot of arguing and black people, one black person trying to outdo another. Like, I don't believe in panels, basically. I believe because this is what tends to happen. So the answer to that is that you have one black person at a time be interviewed. Do you see? They don't have to agree, but one
exactly.
black person explains how they see something. And then at another point or another time, another black person is interviewed, but not this static back and forth. Do you
well,
see what I'm saying?
Yes. You know, what you just explained so beautifully, so clearly about the gun control issue, the killing, you know, in the wake of President Obama's election, and as you pointed out, what that did to put the image of a healthy, intact black family on the world stage. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, with that fear of genetic annihilation, it looks as though this is why you have this open obsession on the part of white males, like the one that was on Piers Morgan, saying we're going back to 1776. You
right.
You're threatening the Civil War and the
and
NRA.
And all that hysterical type discussion, right?
Yeah, it's hysterical.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you see, it's hysterical, and I did use that word. But if you understand what I'm saying, in other words, subconsciously, it's going. See, the subconsciously, the gun is a white man's phallus.
Right.
That's why they use the expression "son of a gun."
Go ahead, teach.
Do you see? So
yes.
So if I don't have my gun. And the gun has to get bigger and bigger and bigger and, you know, shoot more rapidly.
More rounds,
do you see? And they even call, since President Obama was elected, the gun sales have just escalated. And they even call it the Obama effect. But, see, nobody has the courage, and this is why the Attorney General, Eric Holder, He made a brilliant statement, where are we a nation of cowards being unable to talk about racism? Now, I'm sure he wasn't thinking about racism in terms that I'm talking about, but he might have been, I don't know. But he did. That's the critical thing about the world, this area of the world. And amazingly, a white person pointed out to me that the word America, America, if you scramble the letters up and, you know, do like Scrabble, you can put right the phrase, I am race.
Wow.
Now, isn't that remarkable?
That is profound.
You see, but that
has
to do with, I believe, energies that are within the universe.
Yes.
That determine things at levels that, you know, we don't immediately necessarily see and understand. But just the fact that I am race is within the word as an anagram, I am race in the word America. And that is America's absolutely critical problem. Now, in psychiatry, we feel that at least before, you know, now psychiatry is supposed to be about just writing prescriptions. But I'm old school. I've been a psychiatrist more than 40 years, so I will not change in terms of the need to understand behavior. But ever since, you know, we hit upon an analysis of racism, then psychiatry had to change. And so we're not going to talk about dynamics that influence behavior. All we're going to talk about is the chemistry in the brain and what drug will affect what chemical, which means we don't have to discuss racism.
Wow.
Do you see? But
ooh,
I consider it breaking the Hippocratic Oath, because if you can't help people understand what factors in the environment are determining their behavior, do you see? And all you do is just hand out medication, then the person
right.
has to stay on medication forever, and they don't have any understanding. They don't have any insight.
Right.
See, for that matter, white people need insight. The level of white insight is so low it almost doesn't exist. You see, and first of all, because white people control power, they are accustomed to not being analyzed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see, if they don't analyze
right.
themselves, I mean, they can't even look at the fact that the image of the profile of the mass murderer is a white male.
Right.
And that makes absolute sense. See, in other words, they want to say, oh, we have to try to find the mentally ill people and not let them get guns. What about all the people who want to buy guns?
Right.
See, it's the people
right.
who want to buy guns that motivate the people who produce guns. In other words, if there wasn't a market, then the people who produce guns wouldn't be producing them. Do you see? But the conscious
yeah.
subconscious mindset is that every white person has to stockpile guns, and they are doing it for their genetic survival on the planet, whether they look at it that way or not. And that's why when so-called police officers shoot a black man, the statement is, I thought he had a weapon.
Always.
I thought he had a weapon. Now, he does have a weapon, but it's his genetic power that is really being referred to.
Which he can never be without. And
exactly.
So this is why we have
exactly.
a Trayvon Martin and
exactly.
a Jordan
exactly.
Davis.
Exactly.
That is so powerful,
exactly.
what you just provided us with. Oh, my God.
See, now, this
I
is if black
had,
people
okay.
begin to understand this. Like right mm-hmm. now, you know, the way we are collectively functioning is as though we are mentally retarded. It's the same way if, you know, if somebody is on the football field. See, put Frances Welsing on the football field and give her a tennis racket. Do you see somebody? Well, what is she doing on the football field with a tennis racket? Well, she doesn't understand the game. She doesn't understand where she is, and so her behavior is inappropriate for the situation. Well, as long as we don't understand racism, white supremacy, it's just like if I was at the chessboard and I tried to play marbles. You see, you're completely out of it, which is why there are three fundamental questions that psychiatrists ask in a psychiatric examination. They want to know, does the person know who they are? Do they know where they are? And do they understand what time is it? Do you see, now 99.9% of us as black people have not been allowed to understand that we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. The system is structured for white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation by any means necessary. So therefore, racism, white supremacy has to be war against black people in general, but black men in particular, because black men are perceived as a threat to cause white genetic annihilation. And that's only because women cannot, you know, white, black, brown, red, or yellow, women cannot impose sexual intercourse.
Right, exactly.
They can entice, try to influence.
Right.
But they cannot force a male
force it.
To have sexual intercourse, because if you had a rifle and you, you know, said you are going to have sexual intercourse and you frightened a man, he couldn't maintain an erection.
Precisely. Yeah, he has to have a desire somehow.
He has to have the desire that then causes the erection, but if he's frightened,
right.
the erection yeah. cannot be maintained. I mean,
the
Creator designed it that way, so a man, if he's in danger, he's not going to think, well, I better have sex first. No.
Right.
If I'm frightened, then I have to get out of here.
That's powerful. Dr. Welsing, would you be so kind as to, we have a whole lot of people on the line, but I know your time is valuable, too, and you're giving us so much.
No, you can go on. I'll be here, whatever you want to do.
I would take questions. Okay. We've got Dr. Salam calling from Memphis. Dr. Salam? Can you hear us? Okay. Looks like we've developed an audio problem here. That might be because of the subject matter.
Sometimes that happens.
Let me do it. Terrence, can you hear me? I'm not getting any telephone. Every indication is we're on the air, but I'm not connecting with anybody on the phone. Yeah, that has never happened, Dr. Wesley.
Well, I was on I don't know if you know the name Listervelt Middleton. He was a very brilliant black man from Columbia, South Carolina, and he had television show on South Carolina public television, and I was on his show, and they were taping it, and when, you know, we of course were talking about racism, white supremacy, and then one of the camera people came out and said, oh, the cameras are not working anymore.
My God.
And so Mr. Middleton was just very calm. He just said, well, we will just sit here until the cameras start rolling again. And finally they decided that the cameras could roll again. But sometimes at critical points, the equipment won't function.
That is powerful. I just got a call from one of our show's contributors, and he said that they can't talk, but they can hear us. So
we can't hear their questions.
We can't communicate by phone, but they can hear us on the air.
I see.
Yes, that's critical that we, because you are clearing the air of so many questions, and again, I guess the fear, as you've taught so well, the fear of genetic annihilation encompasses a fear and an effort to make sure there's never any discussion of the existence of it as a total system, as you've taught, that permeates every aspect of life. And that's one of the things I wanted you to address tonight is the issue, you alluded to it earlier about family, but the issue of homosexuality, male-female relationships in the black community. And I've heard you talk over the years on marriage. You're the product of a two-parent home. I'm the product of a two-parent home. I mean, certainly there's a capability to rear a child under any circumstances, adverse or otherwise, but it seems like there's been almost a complete disintegration of the institution.
Well,
of
this
marriage
is because of we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. See, if you are fearful that a group of people could cause your genetic annihilation, let's just look at our history and look at Dr. Martin Luther King, whose concept was everybody should love. And this is, you know, like a very important concept. But if you have people on the planet who are fearful of genetic annihilation, and because of their genetic recessive state and their minority status, then everybody can't love, because if that love was expressed in sex, then there would be white genetic annihilation.
Wow.
You see, so all the pieces of the puzzle, my grandmother used to say, she would say, okay, come and help Granny fix the puzzle. And we would say, oh, Granny, it's too many pieces. And my grandmother would say, get all of the straight edge pieces and set the frame. See, once you set the frame, you're setting the context. And then you can figure out where the pieces fit in.
Right.
But without setting the frame. And so I say that by saying, if you understand the frame, you understand why white people suntan.
Right.
They wish they
right.
had color. I remember being in college. I was the only black girl in my class. And the white kids would come and say, oh, Frances, now I'm your color.
What?
And I never knew, you know, you don't understand that, because if you grow up in a black community and you hear white people, you know, black people feeling that, because white people would say black people are ugly because of their color. But then once you get amongst white people, and one of the most important things that they do is to get a tan. Now they're getting tattoos all over their body.
Right, right.
You see, it's like if they get convinced, well, wait a minute, I might get cancer if I do too much suntanning. And so I'm putting black ink on my body. And see, because black people don't understand, it's like we do monkey see, monkey do.
We
have color.
Right.
There's an African proverb that says, the monkey was so busy doing what everybody else was doing that one day the monkey cut his throat.
Wow.
See, monkey wasn't thinking for himself.
Wow.
See, but I.
So here we are drawing all, here we are getting tattoos all over our bodies.
Exactly. 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 You see, but I do believe that if black people begin, see, we're the parent people on the planet. The creative force in the universe made black people the mothers and fathers of everybody.
Right.
See, if you start with crystal black. I mean, the paleontologists and anthropologists, they are now settled. Human life, so-called, began in Africa. And the first people were black. And so all you have to do is have crystal black people who can produce mutations to albinism. This is white skin. White skin is albinism. And mix those two together, and you get all of the colors. But white people can only produce white.
Right.
But
right.
black people can produce all of the colors. There's something in the Bible, I don't know what chapter, I should remember it, but I don't. The sons of God saw the daughters of men. Now see, in other words, white people are mutations from us. So they appear as from, you know, the daughters, the sons and daughters of man. The sons of God, those being black men, saw the daughters
right.
of men, and they were considered fair.
right.
And Neely Fuller has said, under the system of racism, white supremacy, when black men are poor, they want a job. When they get a job, they want luxuries. And when they get luxuries, they want a white woman. That's the mental conditioning that takes place under white supremacy. You see, but it doesn't solve white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
See, if sexual relations solve white supremacy, it would have ended after the first week of enslavement.
Exactly.
The slave masters raping the African women.
Come on. That's right.
Do you see? So sexual relations is not the answer to the system of racism, white supremacy. The answer to, you know, anybody who wants to understand racism, white supremacy, has to understand it for what it is in depth and decide that they're going to deal with it. And I say that's our responsibility as black people. Neely Fuller says there are four classes of people, victims of oppression. They are those who submit to it, meaning the problem is too much for me, I'm just going to roll along. And then you can cooperate, meaning I see it's a problem, but just give me a job and a big salary. That's cooperation with. Then resisting. That means people who are willing to look at and talk about racism and white supremacy, but they're not ready to die. Destruction
right.
of, that's the highest level of self-respect. And so those are the people like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, all the people who started, you know, pressing on, even though they were told their lives were in danger. They continue to press forward against this problem. Patrice Lumumba, you know, the people can be named all over. Nelson Mandela sitting in prison for 27 years. You see, the people
Why?
Who pressed on. And I say those are starting at the, you know, submission, that would be the lowest level of self-respect. Cooperation with is a little higher. People who resist, a higher level. And then those people who persist have had the highest level of self-respect. Like Martin Luther King said, if you have not found that thing for which you are giving, you are willing to give your life is not worth living.
Yes, yes, exactly. That is powerful. You know, I wanted to ask you a question also. You know, there's this controversial film out, Django.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, it will not be seen.
Okay.
See, again, anybody who doesn't understand the system of racism, white supremacy, doesn't know how to weigh anything that they look at.
Right.
So I heard
right.
a young woman say, oh, I saw the film and I thought it was an important love story. It's like there are black people who don't understand racism, white supremacy, and they say,
right.
oh, Thomas Jefferson's relationship with the slave Sally Hemings, that was a romance. Then you don't have a romance with a slave and a slave master.
A slave master. It's not possible. Right. Right.
You see, she wanted to be free. She wanted her children to be free. They weren't freed.
Right.
And so I say that this film, see, we had President Barack Obama, and he's under horrific attack every day, being demeaned, being disrespected.
Exactly.
People saying they want him to fail. Well, simultaneously, we have a movie come out in which the word nigger is used 150 times.
Right.
See, so if you don't understand, this was an opportunity, and I understand that Mr. Tarantino used the word nigger in the Golden Globes Award. Do you see, in other words, the use of the term nigger, when black people use the term nigger, it's just they have been schooled and taught to be victims of racism, white supremacy. And
right.
when people who classify themselves as white want to use the word nigger, it's like, I want you to be my slave again. I want you to be in a demeaned state. So here comes somebody, and he's supposed to be some, you know, off-the-wall producer, and so this is just history. Oh, no. See, to white people who are looking at the film, this says, call them niggers. They're niggers. And so then there's another television show where a black man has 10 baby mamas and 11 children. And black people are supposed to laugh at that and think, oh, this is great because some black man is on television or has a job. It's because we don't understand. See,
well, you know,
people who classify yeah. themselves as white look at that. They feel justified in not employing black people. They feel justified in keeping black people in a demeaned and in a degraded state. See, if you study the history of Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany, see, the Jewish people talk about the Holocaust. Hitler said, I am not interested in their religion. I'm going to kill 11 million because they are not white. the word Semite means mulatto, mixed race, just like all the people in the Middle East. They're mixed between people and white people crossing the Mediterranean. And Hitler said, you're not white. And Germany and Europe and the world is going to be pure white. So anybody who is carrying genetic material from black people is going to be killed.
Right.
Now, the Semite, and so Hitler used negative pictures of Jewish people. Do you see, until the German population's mind was saturated, they are not human. So if you look at a lot of the commercials that are coming on now where you have black men looking stupid.
My husband was talking about that the other day. Yeah.
And a black wife agreeing with the white person that the black man is stupid.
Right.
You see, or a black woman in a soup commercial licking a bowl.
Right. We talked about those very specific things you're talking about. It's similar to the beginning of the 20th century with the minstrel shows and the blackface.
The Help. The movie
The Help. Yes.
See, black people, if they don't understand the context, if they don't understand what the messages are about, like just like Adolf Hitler, these people are not human. They're subhuman. And so people can feel comfortable killing them. And I say we are on, see, the answer to the fear of genetic annihilation is to commit genocide on the people. And I say this is what is happening right now in front of us. That's what the 500 deaths in Chicago.
Yes.
Or the tens of deaths that are all over the United States. See, and black people, gave a paper talking about genocide readiness because they had the Atlanta child murders, and so you do this testing to see, well, let's see how black people respond. It'll be 40 male children killed. Let's see how they respond.
Yeah, how many can we do before they
react? You see, the next time was Jonestown.
Right.
1,000 black people killed. Well, black people, you know, just shrugged their shoulders and kept moving.
That's right.
And then the tens of thousands of black people dying from HIV. And I say HIV/AIDS is biological warfare until proven otherwise.
Yes,
but if people don't understand system of racism, they don't understand biological warfare weapons, which are made, ethno-specific biological weapons are made. See, and this is why I tell people reading is more important than watching TV. Reading
Absolutely.
A book is more important than looking at an iPod.
That's right. And statistics show our children engage in the electronic devices, texting. Black people text more than white people. It's like
In other words, it's almost like a drug.
Right.
See, the brain gets that stimulation, and we have many children. I was talking to a grandparent the other day, and they were talking about the grandchild, high school person, you see, looking hours and hours and hours and hours. And it's just like whether it's heroin, methadone, cocaine, crack, start stimulating cells in the brain, and the brain starts, you know, I like that stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
Give me more of that stimulation until the person becomes addicted. They don't realize they are addicted, but
right.
they can't stop looking at it.
Right. And that's the behavior. It's that of an addiction. Now,
exactly.
The solution then, now, you know, Minister Farrakhan has said more than once that as long as we live with white people, we will live under them. And as you have shown us in your work, this genetic fear of annihilation is not something they can cure themselves of or grow
well,
out
see,
of?
Well, see, I say the answer is understanding racism, white supremacy. See, if you, and this is what Neely Fuller's work is about. Let me see if I can go at it this way. See, when you have one-tenth of the people on the planet controlling the nine-tenths, that means either the one-tenth is smarter than the nine-tenths, or the one-tenth is able to persuade the nine-tenths to behave in the way that is supportive of the one-tenth. And to all of the non-white people on the planet have been taught to hate color.
Yes, yes.
All of them. You see, the Asians want to be white and bleach their skin.
Right.
The Indians
Everybody
of the subcontinent want to bleach their skin. The black people on the continent of Africa and the United States, the Caribbean, everybody wants to bleach their skin. Everybody wants to be white. Everybody wants long, straight hair. Everybody wants to be white.
Right.
And so as long as the majority hate themselves, lack respect for themselves, willing to kill and destroy themselves, then it looks like the one-tenth is powerful, but the one-tenth has just dominated, conquered, brainwashed, and controlled the nine-tenths. And so I say the critical answer is self-respect. I mean, it's like, let's say there was a group of 20 people. One person in the group was a thief. As long as the 20 people didn't know who the thief was, then people's things are stolen all the time. When the one-tenth realize, I mean, the 20 realize who the thief is, then everybody has their eye on the thief and knows what to be, what behavior to expect from the thief.
Right.
And so the thief is under the control.
Right. Right.
So I don't have any doubt that, you see, it's like breaking the Enigma code, that once people begin to understand, and self-respect is the most powerful weapon ever. And our, on a 0 to 10 scale, I would say our, you know, black self-respect level is coasting around 1 and 2, if it's not minus 10.
Right.
It's very low,
and we have to
be able to understand it, because if you wake up in the morning and turn on the television set, you are being programmed to white supremacy.
Right.
You see, white. One silly acting black person, white, almost black person. You see, white, mixed race, white. Do you see? So just turning on the television, looking at an iPod, looking at anything, white.
Yeah, we're submitting to it.
Well, you don't even understand. If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, you cannot screen what is going on. You can look at it if you understand.
And,
and you are not programmed in the same way as if you are looking at it and don't understand.
And, you know, that's another thing the minister said, that if we stop thinking about them, about white people, they will cease to exist. And I understand that because, as you just said, we feed this because we have bought into the picture that they have painted of an alternate universe that's not real. Just like at the very beginning when you said you were, as a young doctor, giving thought to, they call us a minority.
You see, but you have to begin to, in other words, see, you can't ignore power.
Right.
It's like a person cannot sit in a jail cell and tell themselves they're the warden.
Right.
See, I won't think about the guard. I won't think I'll go into some fantasy world where I'm not dealing with reality.
No,
but
you have
stop,
to.
But if we take the thought off of them, I think he means, and start thinking about our own interest, you know, as you were saying earlier, you know, being ourselves, we're so busy imitating them, like the monkey in the story you gave, like the tattoos.
Well, see, I don't want to argue with the minister. We just have different points of view.
Right.
In other words, I'm a psychiatrist.
Right.
That the job of the psychiatrist is to help people deal with reality.
Yes.
Even when they are afraid to do so.
Yes.
So you always have, the brain has to negotiate with reality. It's like if I'm at the edge of a cliff, I better know it.
Right.
You see, if I'm getting ready to step into the desert, I better know that and understand the conditions in the desert.
Right.
And any problem that can be perceived can be solved. See, it's just like Neely Fuller sitting on a radar site in Japan and reflecting on the United States and the world comes up, this is a system. This is a total system structure. And that, to me, is the most brilliant analysis made in the 20th century. See, racism, white supremacy is the biggest problem on the planet. Why? Because
it affects the majority
of people on the planet. It affects negatively. And you see the hysteria that is being generated here. You know, I can't, you know, the whole question about gun control. Because the people who classify themselves as white know they are getting ready to be the minority. And oh my
God, what
will happen if we're a minority in this area of the world? And what if I had to focus on the fact we're a minority on the planet? I remember 1969 at a meeting, National Meeting of the American Psychiatric Association, there was a panel of black psychiatrists talking about racism, and I was a young psychiatrist at the time, just in the audience. There might have been 3,000 people in Miami Beach, and, you know, maybe it was 25 black people at most in the audience, if not 15. And the panel was talking about racism from a Freudian psychoanalytic point of view. And so at the end of the discussion, and the moderator said, well, now we'll take some questions, and so a few people ask questions, and then I ask a question. I said, I think racism is related to the fact that white people are a minority on the planet. And silence fell over this whole huge room of psychiatrists. And so the moderator said, are there any comments? Are there any questions? It was over. The meeting was over. And then, you know, I might be in the lobby of the hotel. You know, you're going to different meetings. And a white person would come up to me, you know, one white person, and say, do you think white people know they're a minority? Now, these are psychiatrists. And whispering. See, this is why the slave is not supposed to learn how to read.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
Let me ask you this, because we're down to about 10 minutes, and it feels like we've been talking for 5 minutes.
Mm.
But we do have sound, and I do want to alert the listeners that I got a message from Blog Talk Radio that they claim that they're having a system-wide outage that is preventing interaction between the callers and the host and the guests. But I pray that in the near future, Dr. Welzin, you can come back, because I didn't even get to some additional questions that I had. You've enlightened us so much on current circumstances.
And darkened.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you know the Nation of Islam, our Muslim program, separation. You know, we believe that, of course, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has had this on the back of Muhammad Speaks, and now we have it on the back of the Final Call. In response to, back in 1965, both black and white media asking him constantly, what is it that the Muslims want? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad answered those questions, and his answers became the program, Muslim program on the back of the paper. And what he sets forth there is we should be allowed a separate state or territory of our own. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, do you see, in other words, if people, you know, it's like I say that the system of white supremacy does exist.
Yes.
And the system of white supremacy, I'm in Washington, D.C., if white people in power said, we're going to take the black people to a concentration camp the day after inauguration, anybody who resists, they'll be shot. Now, do they have the power to do it? I say, of course they do. Yes, they have the power to do that. Do you see? So that is where the power lies, and if we can recognize that. See, if we just transform our understanding, begin, and it's not something you snap your fingers and do, but if people transform their understanding, oh, wow, now I understand what we are dealing with. And Neely Fuller has laid out a whole book about what to do with behavior in all of our areas of activity. I don't know, did I miss your question? Or is that...
I don't think you did. You know, I think that, you know, I wanted to have you share your insight with the listeners because, of course, our view of as the best and only solution to this problem, because it simply is not going to go away, that the differences are irreconcilable. That
see,
no
I think,
thing.
Though, that
yeah.
if, in other words, see, white people, by bringing what we call insight, see, right now, white people, you know, how many black people believe they're genetically inferior to white people? Huge numbers.
Absolutely. I was going to bring that up as one of my questions earlier, which I think you really answered that. Earlier,
so that if people begin to understand what we're dealing with,
right?
Like I remember being in the Bahamas, the first time I was in the Bahamas, and in a hotel, and standing at the elevator. Now, customarily, white supremacy, you know, you have white people moving in front of black people, pushing themselves in front of black people. But in the Bahamas, I said, these white people are strangely just calm and maintaining their place, not having to be the first on the elevator. What's different? And then it hit me. They were in a minority situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they were totally aware that they were in a minority situation. Now, the reality is that the black people in the Bahamas, you know, in other words, white supremacy forces come from all over the world if the black people got out of line.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you see? But it's like, if black people begin to respect themselves, white people will behave differently.
And I think that's what the minister was saying about thinking about them.
They're right there, right in your eye.
Right.
They're right there in your face.
Right.
They haven't disappeared.
Right.
What has changed is that you are not loving them. You are loving yourself.
That's it. That's the point. And you know that this Django movie, there's a scene in there where Leonardo DiCaprio, who plays the plantation owner, very vicious, brutal individual, and he. Are you there, Dr. Welsing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it's like they're doing everything to interfere with this program. But there's a scene where he talks about growing up as the son of a large plantation owner and being surrounded by black faces. And he said, the only question I ever had was, why don't they kill us? And in that, and he goes on to offer this theory that in the skull of black people is an indentation and it makes us submissive in a way that no other people are, et cetera. And, but the point that I'm making goes back to the point you just made earlier about the underlying message of this fear of genetic annihilation, that in this whole psychosis that they have, see, this question, why don't they kill us, what it said to me was, no matter what President Obama does, no matter what any of us do, there's no way of comforting. I think so many black people spend their time trying to convince white people that we are okay to be with. And if they understand what you are setting forth in your psychoanalysis of them, there is nothing we can do in that respect. That rather than focus on trying to convince them how lovely and wonderful we are after 400 years of service to them, The key is to begin to love, respect, and do for self.
Right. In other words, the goal objective from enslavement forward was, well, enslavement and then black people being given the image of God as a white man. Do you see?
All the hundreds of years of brutalization, and
you're given a card or a picture and that looks just like the slave master.
Right.
And told this is God. And
yes.
So then, you know, you've just been beaten down almost into the soil.
Right.
And so you are, you know, I hope somebody will come along, or I hope that I can be saved, and then you're called a nigger, and you're told you're not worth anything, and, you know, called all kinds of demeaning names, and this goes on not for 12 years.
Right.
But for hundreds of years.
Hundreds. Hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years.
Generation after generation.
Do you see? And so you want to believe that at some point you will be pure, or at least your soul will be pure and white, and you will be acceptable. Because, see, the system never takes responsibility for itself. It never says, we are doing this to you to turn you into this.
Right.
We tell you that whatever condition that you're in, if your family has been fractured, it's you who is doing it. Not we are causing your family to be fractured because you can't have a husband and you can't have a father if they're unemployed.
That's right.
These are functional roles.
Right.
And you have to have employment to play the role of husband and to play the role of father. But the system doesn't take responsibility. It just keeps pointing at you and telling you that you're genetically, you're less than human, and you're this and you're that, negative.
Right.
Do you see? So this breaking through the code of victimization and breaking through and finding the keys to the colors.
Well, I want to say to you, Dr. Wellesley, and we're out of time, and this has been, for me, one of the most beautiful experiences I've had since starting this program, and your knowledge and wisdom, and you're so humble, and you bring it all in such on a conversational level that everyone can understand. So I want to thank you on behalf of not only myself but all of the listeners. And again, I want to apologize to the callers and assure you that I will take this up with Blog Talk Radio, what occurred this evening. But Dr. Wellesley, thank you so much, and we feel very blessed to have you. And if in the near future, if you don't mind, we're going to be coming back to you, and hopefully you can join us again on Elevated Places.
I would be very glad to, and you're a wonderful interviewer.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness.
You're a wonderful interviewer.
Thank you. So
I have enjoyed it, and, you know, anytime we can work and get a schedule together again, do call upon me.
I certainly will. And I commend you.
You know, anytime people are wanting to talk about serious issues, and so I commend you. And I have enjoyed talking with you, and I hope the people who are listening, you know, that I've said something that makes some sense.
I have no doubt.
And I just want to say, I do not have any doubt that we will be victorious in replacing racism, white supremacy, with a system of justice on the planet, so that there can be peace.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful. Thank you so much. Love you.
Love you. Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye now.
Take care. And to the listeners, thank you for your patience and for joining Elevated Places. And we pray that we will be back again next Thursday night. Thank you all so much.
Now, I'm going to close this. Rather quickly. But as you look at the suffering of the masses of our people, and you see our children dropping out of school, and it appears that they don't want knowledge. Wrong. They have curious minds. They do not want the porridge that belongs to an enemy educational system that is rooted in the idea of white supremacy. That idea has run its course. And the light of education, which is the torchlight of civilization of white people, is going out. And as that light goes out, like if the sunlight were to go out, the planets would collide. When the light of your education begins to dim and to die out, then the institutions that were kept begin to clash with each other, and the house gets into disorder. And the disorder is leading to the fall of America. And our brother Barack campaigned to be Pharaoh. And he got it. Pharaoh. world, meaning you are going to manage the affairs of Egypt, not the affairs of the children of Israel. So there has to be among us qualified black leadership that will attend to the needs of our people, because the government is not capable of sufficing our needs.
It's